All right. So just brief review. So still in Genesis. If you remember last time we wrapped up chapter 17 where we were talking about the sign of the Abrahamic covenant. Now Abram's name has been officially changed to Abraham. So I can just call him Abraham now and not slip up all the time. So we kind of wrapped up there. And so real quick, just a review of kind of where we're at in this Toledot, right? Remember Genesis dividing these Toledot, these generations, kind of those sections. In the Toledot that we're in of like Terah, which focused primarily on Abraham, and we're still in that, we talked about how in this section, kind of the main theme that God is at work in doing in here is that he is building his nation and he's laying the foundation for this nation to make an international impact, right? That's really the point of this, is he is building his nation and laying kind of the foundation for this nation to make an international impact. And we talked about that this foundation for the nation primarily consists of two kind of important items, okay? So if we think of this foundation of in the life of Abraham, there's two like kind of big important items that would be foundational in that section, as well as they're going to be foundational to Israel as a nation later on. Because remember, these are the patriarchs. This is God laying this foundation. And the things that characterize God's interactions with like Abraham, Jacob, are also going to be what characterizes interactions with the nation of Israel later on. So it's the foundation for the nation as well. And so the two items we talked about was the Abrahamic covenant. And then the reality of faith. Okay? And we saw that those two kind of items here are the kind of big foundation that God is laying. Okay? And specifically, like when we talked about the Abrahamic covenant, we had a lot of promises that God gave, and we kind of summed it up into kind of three main items, if you guys remember what those are. Do you guys remember what those three items were? Huh? Okay, seed's one of them.
Land.
Yeah, land. Seed. One more. Yeah, blessing. Are really those kind of promises, those aspects of the Abrahamic covenant. And what we've seen in the life of Abraham is God has made these promises, but then there's also this reality of Abraham then needs to believe those promises. Okay, and we've seen that being tested with various aspects of the land being tested. Are you going to believe that this land truly is yours? Okay, and then also even in the midst of like the seed of, do you trust me that you will have an offspring and everything? Okay, all right. And so that kind of picks us up. And so chapter 17, as again, kind of picking us right where we left off, was the signs of the covenant that God had made to, again, reaffirm all these promises, that he is going to be faithful to all of this. And so you had some name changes there. You had circumcision, like all these things were to show that God is going to be faithful to his promises. Okay? All right. And so that takes us into chapter 18, because if you remember, at this point, what's like the issue with these promises? One of the main issues with Abraham in their current situation. Yeah, they don't have an offspring, right? So again, God keeps giving these promises of, I'm going to make a big nation out of you. Not going to be able to number your offspring, all that. And Abraham's still thinking, well, I don't even have one kid. Okay, like I still don't even have one. What do we do with that? And so that issue still needs to be resolved, and we'll see that resolved in the next few chapters as well. All right, so, but in chapter 18, as we come to this, we see this final promise of an offspring. Okay, God's going to promise one more time, and then we see this promise going to be fulfilled just a couple chapters later. And so in chapter 18, what you have these three men come to on your packets. You're like probably midway through your packets. They're not. They're from last week as well. Okay, so we're in chapter 18, final promise. You have these three men that come to Abraham, visit him, and he shows great hospitality to them, invites them. We find out later, like through this chapter, that one of them is the Lord, and then two of them are angels. And so that's the three. And then they have this conversation as he shows this hospitality, provides for them. And again, he promises, the Lord promises that by this time next year, they will have a son. Okay, so the promise gets a lot more specific. Okay, so again, this has been going over years, but now it's kind of coming down to the end here where God is actually promising, hey, by next year, you're going to have a kid. You're going to have a son. And do you remember, so Sarah overhears this. Do you remember how she responds? Yeah, she laughs about it. And do you remember back in chapter 17, I didn't mention this, but do you remember who else laughed about that? We always pick on Sarah, but someone else did too. Huh? No. Huh? Yeah, Abraham. Abraham also laughed, right? So I don't know why we focus on Sarah, but they both do, right? In different situations, they both kind of laugh about this. And so the Lord kind of confronts Sarah, like, hey, is anything too hard for the Lord? And so we have here this reality of not only does Abraham need to believe, but who else needs to believe? Sarah, right? Like this is foundational, not just to life of Abraham, but the nation. So Sarah also needs that faith. She needs to believe. And then we have like he reveals the name's going to be Isaac, which do you guys know what Isaac means? Yeah, it means like he laughs, okay? And so kind of a play on words there of their response, as well as like their sorrow will be turned to joy and laughter. But then also some people speculate that also could be this idea of that God is the one who gets the last laugh kind of a thing, right? Where he's going to be proven right in the midst of this. And so whenever they see Isaac and remember that name, it's this reminder to Abraham and Sarah that they need to believe and trust in the Lord and his promises, right? He is that continual reminder for them. Okay. All right. And then the second half of chapter 18 is as these men leave, they mention to Abraham that they are going to head down to Sodom. And do you remember why they're going to Sodom? A friendly visit? No, like to bring judgment, right, on their wickedness. And so to bring judgment there. But then in chapter 18, what we have is Abraham interceding for Sodom, okay? Where if you remember kind of that story where he tries to kind of like essentially bargain with the Lord, right? Where it's kind of like, okay, well, if there's like 50 people, righteous people there, will you not destroy it? And God says like, yeah, I won't destroy it. And he's like, okay, well, what about like 40? What about 30? Like, and he kind of keeps going, whittling down until finally he's like, okay, what if like 10 righteous people are there? Will you not destroy it? And God says, I won't if there's 10 righteous people, which again, the implication is there's obviously not, okay? There's not even that many, okay? But we can ask this question of why is Abraham trying so hard to intercede for Sodom here, okay? Do you remember who lives there? Yeah, Lot went and moved there, right? And you remember Lot's relation to Abraham? Nephew, and what do we also describe him as?
Heir.
Huh? Yeah, yeah, the backup plan, right? He's kind of the backup plan, one of the backup plans, right? To where if God didn't actually follow through with this promise of an offspring, well, I still got my nephew who's kind of here, right? And so that's why it's so significant. And so that's why he's interceding so hard for Sodom, right? Not because he's just interested in Sodom. He's in particular interested about like one person, Lot, okay? All right, and then that takes us into chapter 19 with Sodom and Gomorrah, which again, maybe a passage you guys are familiar with. We don't have time to go into all the details, all of that. But what we see here is the wickedness of the city is great. We see that on display even in the events of this chapter, and as a result, are deserving of judgment, okay? And again, we don't have time to go into specific details with all this, but one of the main things, right, I think even in these times, like, there's acts of homosexuality going on and different things, right? And people try to argue of, well, that's not what's being addressed here. And I'm sure that wasn't, like, the only sin, right? But that's what we have in chapter 19. And just one point we'll make real quick to support this is in verse 5 of chapter 19, notice what these men say as they kind of come to Lot. And remember, like, the two angels, the guys that are with go to Lot, are staying with him. And the men of the city come, and they ask, where are the men who came to you tonight? And then it says, bring them out to us that we may know them. And again, people try to argue, well, that's just them, like, hospitality or stuff like that, like, different things. But that's not the context of even, like, Genesis, right? Because this idea of knowing someone that we've seen this far already in Genesis, that terminology is used, like, with Adam and Eve, okay, where Adam knew his wife Eve and they had a son. Okay, it's used with Cain and his wife of he knew his wife and they had a kid, right? Like, and so both these references of this kind of idea of this knowing is kind of carries that idea of, like, the sexual intimacy, but also kind of in the fullness of marriage, right? In that intimate context of marriage. And so these men, what is really happening is they are seeking to pervert that covenant of marriage. And that's what's kind of going on here, okay? And the fact that even Lot understands this, okay, is clear, because if you look, like, a little bit later, like, he offers, like, his daughters to the men instead. And how does he describe them? They have what? Never known a man, okay? And so it's not like they've never met one. It's that, like, the sexual intimacy aspect of it, okay? And so again, that's a really brief thing, but we see, like, that's kind of what's going on, okay? And so we see the angels intervene. They bring Lot and his family out of the city. And it's interesting, as you read through this, even in, like, the judgment is kind of right at the door, essentially, and Lot kind of lingers, if you remember that. He's kind of like, oh, like, taking his time, and you think judgment's coming. You should be a little more, like, urgent here. But they finally get him and his family out, except for his wife looks back, that whole thing. And then God rains down judgment, right? Sulfur and fire from heaven and destroys Sodom and Gomorrah, okay? And so complete devastation there. And just on a kind of side note, I didn't touch on this before. If you remember back with Lot and Abraham, when they were kind of splitting off of where to settle in the land, right? You guys remember that? And Abraham gives Lot the choice of, hey, where do you want to go? And Lot decides to go settle, like, in the Jordan Valley, ends up in Sodom. And he describes it as kind of like, oh, this is like the garden of God, right? Like, this is a lush and beautiful place, kind of a thing, right? That's what he would have seen. But do you know what's kind of like in that area now, like in Israel? That's like where the Dead Sea is, okay? That's where the Dead Sea is. And as the name suggests, like, not much lives there, right? Like, and so you see a complete kind of destruction because of the sin and wickedness, okay, of this city. All right. And you see the ramifications even still, like, today, okay? Okay. So God brings judgment. And then what's significant here, another significant part, if you look at verses 27 to 28 of chapter 19, where kind of the next day the story picks up, and it says, and Abraham went early in the morning to the place where he had stood before the Lord, and he looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the valley, and he looked, and behold, the smoke of the land went up like the smoke of a furnace. Okay? And so, what do you think Abraham kind of assumes here? Yeah, Lot's gone. Right? They didn't have the, like, texting we have today of the I'm okay in Sodom, right? Like, whatever, you know, and the storms come, I don't know, stuff like that happens on our phones. But he didn't have that, right? So he just wakes up early, he sees, like, there's just destruction. Then what? Like, Lot's gone, right? He didn't know his backup plan is gone. And so really, what's the Lord communicating? Like, you have to trust me, right? Backup plan's gone, are you going to trust me? But then even we can unpack this though a little bit of But was Lot actually gone? No, right? And that's kind of a takeaway for us even today, right? Where there's sometimes I think we pray for a lot of things and like we can like pray really hard for something and we could assume God never answered it. Like, oh man, he just never answered it. But what we learn from passages like this, even though Abraham thought like God didn't answer his like kind of prayer, his request, did God actually answer it? Yeah. Even though he didn't know it. Eventually he probably finds out, right? But like he didn't know it at the time. And like same with us, right? There's sometimes we pray and we're like, oh, God never answered it. But he might have actually, right? And maybe we find out later, maybe we don't. Maybe this side of heaven we don't. But God works even when we're unaware, okay? That's a small takeaway with that. All right, and then chapter 19 then kind of wraps up with this small story of Lot and his daughters. Kind of messed up story here, but we'll touch on it. So Lot and his daughters, they flee from Sodom, right? They end up not staying in the city of Zoar near there, but instead they go up and live in a cave. And kind of through that, the daughters are dismayed that they won't have kids, all that. And so they kind of hatch this plan to where they will get their father drunk and sleep with him and have kids that way. Not great, right? That is pretty messed up. But we see their plan succeeds. Okay, they succeed. But then notice the couple names, right? So you have one of the sons is called Moab, which that becomes the nation of Moab. That's what we see later on in the Old Testament. That's their beginnings is here. So that becomes the nation of Moab. And then the other son, Ben-Ami, which becomes the nation of the Ammonites. Okay, nation of the Ammonites. So again, these nations that are coming, and both are kind of enemies of Israel in the future as well. And again, really weird and messed up situation. The names kind of like support that as well, okay? Because Moab, the name for that kid, can mean a couple things. It could either mean from father or who is my father? Kind of weird, right? And then Ben-Ami means son of my people. Very literally, right? Like, and like for us, like, yeah, that's kind of weird, gross, like all that. But you also have to remember, like, do you guys know who, like, probably the most famous Moabite in the Old Testament? Yeah, Ruth. Okay, Ruth. And so you can understand, you start to understand the stigma that would have come with her being Ruth the Moabitess, right? Like there's a lot of baggage kind of coming out of that, okay? And so again, gives that context for future events, okay? All right. And then we come to chapter 20 here in the first, for this chapter. And what we have here is kind of these events that are very similar to when Abraham went down to Egypt, but this time with a guy named Abimelech. And we have, like, Abraham, they kind of interact with this guy, and Abraham says, Sarah's my sister. He kind of does that play again. And once again, it kind of works. But we see the Lord intervenes once again, and then Abimelech returns Sarah to Abraham with other goods, possessions, all that. But we can ask this question, why do we have this event again, right? Some people argue like different things of why it's in there, but we can ask this question of like, why have another event like this? Why talk about this once again, right? It's like, we already went through this, Abraham. Why are we doing this again? And so, if you stop and think about it for a moment, this King Abimelech, in wanting Sarah and all this, what's kind of weird about this whole situation of Abimelech taking Sarah essentially to be a part of like his harem, right, is really what it is. What would be kind of weird about that from what we know about like Sarah? Yeah, she's like over 90 years old. Not kind of what you would picture, right, like of a king like, that's the one, right? Because what? They want probably good looking and more importantly, what? Someone who could bear kids, right? And again, you don't think like 90-year-old prime bearing years, right? That's not it. And so what's the point of this? Like Abimelech isn't dumb, right? It's not like he's dumb, but rather kind of the point of this is to show what? That Sarah can do what? bear children, right? Somehow God in some way, right, has seemingly kind of made her young in a sense, right? To where she is now able to bear children. And so that's the point of this event, is that she is able to bear children. And to support that, what's the very next event? Chapter 21, the birth of Isaac, right? That's why you have that event, is to show she is capable of bearing children. And so it leads us to the birth of Isaac in chapter 21. And so you see those first seven verses, the birth plays out, and we see that it will be through Isaac that God's plan will continue. It will be through him that the Abrahamic covenant continues. And remember, we talked about last time, the Abrahamic covenant connects to like the Noahic covenant, connects back to the blessings of creation, the promises of Genesis 3:15, everything essentially. And so all that is linked with now Isaac. Okay, it is through him, and we'll see that confirmed throughout Genesis as well. And once again, we see Sarah declaring the Lord has made laughter for her, right? Again, proving that name, and again, proving God is saying, like, I was right, told you so, right? Essentially, gets that last laugh. But then we see in the following section that what God essentially promised is unfolding, right? In Genesis 17, chapter 17, God had promised Abraham that Isaac would be the one that he would make the covenant with, not Ishmael, right? Ishmael, the son of Abraham and Hagar, kind of their ill-conceived plan with that. But we also remember in Genesis 17, even though like God's plan wouldn't go through Ishmael, the fact that he was one of the offspring of Abraham still meant that there would be some sort of blessing connected to him as well. That God would still make a great nation out of Ishmael. Okay, and we see those promises being kind of declared to like Hagar in the section, giving her that comfort as they are sent out as well. And we see that unfold, right? That God ends up turning Ishmael, like, and his descendants into a great nations as well. All right, and then we have Abraham interacting with Abimelech again in chapter 21. And again, God's plan moving forward through this interaction. And they end up having a disagreement over a super exciting thing of a well, okay? So there's a disagreement over a well of like who dug it, who owns the water with it. And Abraham was the one who dug it. And eventually they kind of make this covenant that establishes, yes, Abraham was the one who dug this well. It is his, which kind of shows he has what we'd say like the water rights in that area. That doesn't mean that he like owns the land, but he kind of owns the water in a sense of that land, which is significant since you kind of need that to live. So if he now has these water rights in this area called like Beersheba, right, which means like well of the oath, that's the city now, Beersheba, kind of with that. This is in a step in the right direction of fulfilling what part of the Abrahamic covenant? The land, right? The land part of this. That it is a step forward with that. And so we have all this coming, moving forward, right, where we have this land promise seemingly to take steps in the right direction. We have the birth of Isaac, and so the seed is like looking, hey, this is looking pretty great and everything. But then you come to chapter 22 where we kind of have like this final test, right? This final test where everything is on the line, and we have this final test with the sacrifice of Isaac. And so, again, this might be a familiar story to some of you, right? Like this kind of testing of Abraham here and the sacrificing of his son. But we have to, again, think of the context and understand the significance of what is going on here. Because it's not just a father losing his son, which that's like devastating in its own way, right? That's significant of a parent losing their child kind of a thing. But that isn't all that it is. And we have to remember that all that is like linked with this son, right? What did we just talk about? That all the promises of the Abrahamic covenant, right, are kind of linked with Isaac now, and we talked about what did the Abrahamic covenant link to, the Noahic covenant, the promises of Genesis 3:15, the promises of like creation, the blessings there. And so really everything is linked with Isaac. And so the question is, Abraham, will you continue to trust the Lord? Will you continue to have faith in this? And will you trust him to fulfill everything that he has promised, even if you lose everything? That's really the question. That's the intensity of this chapter that's going on. Okay? And so let's get into kind of this chapter. And so at the beginning, remember, it starts with this kind of call for him to go. So he says, take your son and go. And notice here how he kind of really specifies, where in verse 2, he says, take your son. And maybe Abraham could think like, I don't know, which one? Ishmael, you want to go grab him? Like all that. He's like, no, take your son, your only son, Isaac, and catch this last part, whom you love. Okay, so again, you feel the weight of that, the emotion even in that of this is his beloved son, right? This is a son whom he loves. He is to take him, and what's it say? And go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. Okay, and so this burnt offering, that's an offering that was wholly consumed. So it's not like, oh, maybe he could get out of it, right? Like, it's a wholly consumed offering. And you can't miss some of the like parallels between his original call to like go to a land I will show you, and then even now where it's go and I'll go to a mountain that I will show you, right? Like again, there's this element of faith, and it kind of has similar language to make this kind of bookends of Abraham's life is all about what? Faith, right? Faith at the beginning of this call to go to a land that I'll show you, and even faith in this last kind of final test. And so we see Abraham once again obeys. We see he rises early the next morning. And notice, how long of a journey was this? Does it say? You guys catch that? Yeah, 3 days. So 3 days. That's 3 days for Abraham to be like thinking about this. I think when we have these situations, we want it done over as soon as it can be, because I don't want to dwell on this, right? But it's these 3 days, and the question is always like, will he remain faithful, right? Is he going to have faith and trust the Lord even in the midst of this? And so they get near the location, verse 5. They had some other people with them, but he tells them to stay back. And notice what he says in verse 5. Abraham says, stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you. And what's weird about that kind of statement? What's weird about that statement, like what we know? Yeah, like you'd almost expect like, all right, we're going to go and then I'll come back, right? Like that kind of thing. But no, he says like, we'll come back, right? We'll come to you again. And we see like in Hebrews 11, we see that faith on display. Like Abraham didn't understand what was going to happen, but he had that faith that, I don't know, God might raise him from the dead. I don't know what's going to happen. But he had that faith, and we see that on display even here. Okay? And you even have like Isaac kind of asking about this. Like, hey, like, there's no animal. Aren't we supposed to do a sacrifice? And that's where we should point out, like, I think we often have this picture of Isaac as, like, this little boy that's, like, kind of walking around. But most people, like, the way dates and all that line up, he's probably, like, in his 20s or 30s. So he's not, like, some little kid that's just being led along. Like, he knows, he can catch on, right? He's catching on. And so you see not only the faith of Abraham here, but also the faith of who? Isaac. Because what? He could have easily, like, over 100-year-old Abraham trying to like kill him or something, be like, not today, old man, like, and just like tackle him, like, right? Like, he could take him, right? He could deal with him. But no, Isaac submits to all that because what? He too has faith. Okay, so we see faith aspect of not only Abraham but also Isaac. And so you see all this unfold, right? Like, prepares all this stuff to offer, and just before he slays him, right, essentially for the offering, what? The Lord intervenes, angel of the Lord appears, calls out to him, like, don't sacrifice Isaac, because the Lord is what? Seen your obedience. He has seen your faith here. Okay, and the Lord provides an offering instead, right? Provides a ram for them to sacrifice and all that. But notice here, and then point out, like, God reemphasizes some of his promises, right? And everything. But notice verse 17, which is interesting here. So again, he says, I will surely bless you. So again, we have that blessing. I will surely multiply your offspring, again, the seed, as the stars of heaven and as the sand that is on the seashore. But notice this last phrase here, and your offspring shall possess the gate of his enemies. So again, we have this idea of the multiple offspring, right? Like, your offspring is going to be like the dust of the earth, all that, like, but then it specifies into, but then you'll have an offspring that will possess the gate of what? His enemies. Again, you would expect their enemies if it was in general, but it's singular, specific, a person. And what's that kind of connect us back to? Where else did we see this idea of like a plurality of offspring, but then a culminating in one offspring? Where did we see that in Genesis? You guys remember? Putting you guys on the spot. Before that, Genesis 3:15. Right? If you remember the promise, like in the fall, the curses of the fall, where we see kind of first hints of the gospel, where God talks about, I will put enmity between you, talking to the serpent, you and the woman, between your offspring and her offspring, again, the general. And then he specifies into, he shall bruise your head and you shall bruise his heel, right? Into the, yes, there will be many offspring, but there will be a specific one. And that's what, again, you have here as well. That even though, yes, your offspring will be like the sand of the seashore, all that, but there will be one who will possess, it says, the gate of his enemies. Okay? And so this is, again, linking what we kind of saw, like implied before, makes clear that the Abrahamic covenant, all that is tied in with Genesis 3:15 as well. Okay? And this is going to move God's plan forward. And that's exactly what we see like in the next verse, verse 18. And in your offspring shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. Okay, so again, blessing as well in the midst of that. All right. Let's see. I can do a little bit more before we do a break. Chapter 23, we have Sarah's death and burial. Some rabbis joke of, they say, oh, Sarah must have died right after this because when she heard the news of what Abraham just did with Isaac, she died from shock, kind of a thing. We don't know. Could be that. But it seems to be somewhat soon after that. All right. That's kind of a jokingly thing. But it was probably not too long after that. But Sarah dies. And then we see Abraham wants to purchase a burial place from the Hittites, so some of the people there. And so he wants to bury a place. They tell him, hey, pick a place, all that. He picks a place. He wants to pay for it. And do you guys remember the story where then, like, the Hittites kind of like, oh, no, like, barrier for free. It's fine. And you're like, oh, that's so nice of the Hittites, right? That's really nice. But then Abraham kind of pushes back, like, no, like, I want to buy it. They say, like, no, it's okay. It's really fine. But then he keeps pushing until finally, like, they allow him to buy it, okay? And so we have to kind of understand what's going on in the context of that time, because I think we could look at it and just think, like, man, the Hittites are just, they're some nice people, right? That they're just willing to give off that land and all that. But what we have to understand that time is kind of the way you would own land back then was you needed to own land, right? Do you see kind of an issue with that? Where, so you have almost like this kind of landowners association type of thing. And the only way to be a part of it is to own land. But the only way to buy land or get land is you had to own land. Kind of a weird thing, right? It kind of is like this closed off thing to where like only those people could own it. And so, right, Abraham trying to break into this, right, to actually own this land, what? You can understand this is why the Hittites are being so seemingly nice, not because they are just nice, great people, but rather what? They're trying to prevent Abraham from doing what? Owning land and being a part of this kind of association, you could kind of say, right? To be able to own even more land at later times, okay? And we kind of see that even with when they finally allow him to buy it, what? They charge, like, it says like 400 shekels of silver for this plot of land. We don't know exactly how much that is, but like later on in the Old Testament, like in Jeremiah, Jeremiah builds buys a field for like 17 shekels of silver. Okay, so I don't know. Think of inflation too, right? I don't know. Got to be pretty significant. And he only paid 17. Abraham paying 400 shekels of silver. So this kind of exorbitant price, again, probably to try to prevent him from doing it, but he pays it, right? Which not only shows kind of his wealth that the Lord is making him truly into this great nation, but also it shows what? Abraham's commitment to believe the Lord's land promise. I'll pay whatever it takes, right? I'll pay whatever it takes because this is what God has promised me, right? This land, God has promised me, and so I'll do whatever it takes. And so we see that faith on display. Okay, again, all these aspects of the Abraham covenant coming into display here. All right. And then we have Abraham seeking out a wife for Isaac. And so, again, this is moving the seed promise forward. So they have a seed, like they have Isaac, but now he needs a wife to have kids, all that, right? And so he takes one of his servants, gives him instructions to kind of go to some relatives, all that, and find a wife for Isaac. And so he kind of gives two main instructions to this servant. The first, he tells him to not let Isaac marry a Canaanite. Okay, do not let him marry a Canaanite, people from the land of Canaan, because he understands the wickedness of the Canaanite people and the negative impact that they would have on Isaac if he were to marry one of them. Okay. And then second, he tells the servant to not let Isaac leave the land. Okay, to not let Isaac leave the land. Why? Because remember, like, we have this promised land. And what happened? Did it turn out well for Abraham when he left the land last time? No, right? It didn't turn out well. So he's learning, right? And he's like, hey, have him stay in the land, okay? And so the servant goes, arrives in the city, and he, if you guys remember this, he prays to the Lord and kind of asks the Lord, like, to bring the chosen kind of woman for him. And he kind of does this, like, ask for like this sign, essentially, where for the woman that the Lord has appointed, that she'd be the one who would come, give him, allow him to drink from the water she drew from the well, as well as then provides water for all his camels. And you think, like, that's an interesting sign, but when you actually stop and think about it, he had like 10 camels with him, and they can easily drink about like 30 gallons of water each. And so that's like 300 gallons of water. Their water pots at that time would probably hold like 3 gallons of water. And so again, not like today where you just like flip on the faucet and like, all right, we're going to be here a while. What? You got to go to a well and draw the water. And some wells, this one seemed to be one of them, would be kind of, you'd have to descend, right? Go down these steps to like a water source, get the water, come back up the steps and all that. And so what? This person would essentially have to do like almost 100 trips up and down these stairs, getting the water, doing all this. That's not a small task. Not many people would be lining up of, oh, can I water all your camels? Like, yeah, that sounds fun. No. And so we see clearly that if someone offered to do this, so the servant doesn't even ask it, right? Someone just offers this, then that is clearly the one that God has chosen. Because again, this isn't an easy task. No one would want to do this necessarily. And so this is the sign. And what do we see? We see Rebecca come on the scene. And she's from the family of Abraham's relatives, all that. And she does this very sign. Gives the servant something to drink. Offers to give drink to like all the camels, all that. Does all of it. And so clearly, the one God has chosen to provide for Isaac. And so the servant kind of tells her this. They go and tell the family, and they recount, he recounts all that the Lord is doing through the life of Abraham, all that stuff. And the family kind of tries to delay Rebecca going, but Rebecca knows she needs to go, all that. And so they get ready to leave and all everything. But then notice in verse 60, let's see, this blessing that her family gives like to Rebecca as like they leave here. And it says, "Our sister, may you become thousands of 10,000s, and may your offspring possess the gate of those who hate him." Does that sound familiar? Yeah. A promise that God just made with Abraham, that he will possess the gate of his enemies, right? Again, showing that God's plan is moving forward, and it's going to continue through who? Isaac and Rebecca, and their line is what God is going to do. And so they go back, they come back and everything, and Isaac meets them. And of significance there, as Isaac approaches, Rebecca asks the servant, "Who is this?" And he says, "What? This is my master." Okay, that we see this kind of transferring from Abraham to Isaac is taking place, and the foundation that's being laid in Abraham is being passed on to Isaac. Okay? And we see the death of Abraham in chapter 25, the first part here. Okay? Where we see this all comes at kind of the end of this toledot of Terah. Abraham passes away. We see he takes another wife. They have more children. And again, these children are not who like the blessed line will go through, but because they are offspring of Abraham, they will be blessed in a sense and all that. But we see God's plan is moving through Isaac in his line. Okay, so he dies, bury him with Sarah, and that wraps up the life of Abraham. Okay? And then real quick, and then we'll take a break, the generations of Ishmael. So the toledot of Ishmael is just this next kind of section here real quick. And again, showing God faithful to the promise he made even regarding Ishmael. That like he made nations through him. And so even though he wasn't part of the chosen line, he was still faithful to fulfill what he had promised concerning concerning Ishmael and his descendants. Okay? All right. And so we'll take our little break now, and then we'll pick back up in 5 minutes or so.